Yeah, so I think the other really big one to be aware of is the Low Maud Act amendments. That's the other beast, let's call it, after this the one we just talked about. So a couple years ago, we made some pretty significant changes to the Low Maud Act. We did that again this year after hearing back from different stakeholders in this. One of the biggest things now is, if you recall, a couple years ago, really the only way to streamline this process, which is supposed to be streamlined in the first place, was to cut out a stage of review. But that meant that developers went straight into a pretty costly endeavor to engineer the whole project before they had a stage of approval. So having that feedback, we've now put the master plan level, the concept review, back in at the option of the developer, not as a requirement, but at the option of the developer to go in and have some type of vesting into their project at that first stage. The importance of that is that it's not your typical master plan review. We've all been there, where communities can take full advantage of those requirements. This is a very prescribed stage of review. So the statute actually says these are the items a municipality can require, and only these, for master plan review. And you cannot deny an application based on the fact that an applicant didn't submit something that's required at the next stage, like full traffic study, for example. You can defer those findings till you have the full traffic study, but you can't outright deny a project. So I think that'll be a widely used tool, especially on larger projects. And then it means that you don't have to, that developer, if they elect to do master plan, does not, they do not have to also do a pre-application. And then there's a change in the standards, and this bill is set up so these changes I'm talking about are effective now. There are changes, I'll talk about it in a minute, that are effective January 1. In the previous bill we talked about, all of those changes are effective now. But the standards change. Previously, you had standards for denial and standards for approval. We've made it one, so it's like a typical application, and that the findings for these projects, approval or denial, have one set of standards. And then another, I think, big change, depending on where you are and what community you're in, is we provided some clarification on the requirement that the low mod units be law pre July 1 was similar in scale and architectural style. Well, that interpretation varied pretty significantly across the state. One community would tell you they have to be exact, and they have to be, a two-car garage, the exact same square footage. And as everybody knows, with construction costs and the limits you can sell these units or rent these units for, the math doesn't math. So that is further clarified by language in there to mean roof, as far as the architectural scale, meaning roof lines, materials, things like that from an outside perspective. But that the size can be, an affordable unit can be 75% of the size of a market rate unit. So we put some markers in there to provide some flexibility. It also provides flexibility with age-restricted units. So if you want to have some portion, right, that's the hot button in some of these communities. We don't want school kids. We don't want, which is, not legal, but at least there's flexibility in providing housing, and it's for a needed population. But it allows you to not then require all the rest of the development to be the exact same as your age-restricted units. So there's a lot in this bill, from a design standpoint, from a, comparison of affordable versus market rate in there, while still meeting the purpose of this. The biggest change is that as of January 1st, 2026, the so-called rental exemption communities, are no longer exempt from the comprehensive permit process. So previously, communities that had over 15%, I believe it was, of their rentals as affordable were exempt from this whole process. That no longer happens. So the only, you can actually now submit a comprehensive permit in any community. If that community is over 10% of its year-round housing, then they've got more flexibility in telling you, no, you don't get an automatic density bonus. You don't get this relief. But everybody else who's under 10% of the whole, all of their units is now subject to the density bonuses, the request for relief, things like that. So pretty significant change in the Low Mod Act.
And Joel, the League of Cities and Towns, when it came to some of these, if not most of these pieces of legislation, were on board, were they not?
They were. We do have letters of approval. They did, suggest some changes on some of the bills, some of which were incorporated. You've got the outlier communities, I think, who oppose some of these, obviously the communities who had the rental exemption. But, you know, it's a hard argument to make that a community should be exempt from needing to provide affordable. And, you know, we all know what that means. The public may not, but these are workforce housing, things like that. So, we did get support from the League, even if it was, you know, support with amendments.
Yeah, I say that because, yourself, but the Speaker and the Senate leadership and most of it was on, of course, Speaker Sakarchi, did such a good job of getting input and collaboration and stakeholder involvement with so many folks that I just want the folks listening to understand that these new laws don't, I mean, there's going to be always some resistance in the different areas of the state, but generally speaking, the towns, the industry, the state, the environment, everyone was involved in the process, so far as I know, and the collaboration was there, and there should be less resistance to some of these things than there typically would be going forward because of the speaker's efforts there. So with that.